Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
Sadly, the person who's running the executive branch is a deranged, unhinged, dangerous president of the United States. And only a number of days until we can be protected from him. But he has done something so serious that there should be prosecution against him.
That's Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, last night on 60 Minutes, making her case for impeaching President Trump again with less than 2 weeks before Inauguration Day. The House introduced a resolution asking for the invoking of the 25th Amendment by Vice President Pence. If not, impeachment proceedings could get underway as early as Wednesday. So what does this mean? And what can be done in such a short period of time? And why is this different from the last impeachment of the president? Well, joining us with answers and perspective are Dr. Niambi Carter, Howard University political science professor and author of American While Black, African Americans, Immigration, and the Limits of Citizenship, and attorney and political analyst A. Scott Bolden. Lines are open. I want to hear from you tonight. Give us a call. What do you think? Should the House move forward with impeaching President Trump? Should the House try to have him removed through the invoking of the 25th Amendment? Give us a call. Lines are open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Scott, Dr. Carter, thanks for joining the conversation.
Thanks for having me.
So let me start with you, Dr. Carter. Kind of give me a little politics, civics lesson 101 about the 25th Amendment. Why are they trying to have that done first, beyond just having the president removed?
Well, I mean, I think they want to do that because I think they view that as a sort of more clear, perhaps even less politically motivated move, because in order for the 25th Amendment to be invoked, Vice President Mike Pence would have to be on board with this, as well as the other executive members of the cabinet. So, you know, it's I think, preferred process at this point, one, because I think there's a sense that it can move quickly, but more quickly, I should say, but two, because it would be a true repudiation by the people that Donald Trump selected to support him in his executive role.
Mm. But, you know, here's the thing, Scott. There is, as Dr. Carter just mentioned, this could be quick. But the reality is that his cabinet and his hand-picked vice president are the ones who would have to do that. And despite all that we have seen and are still seeing over the past, over these past few days, that seems unlikely.
Well, it also seems that many of his cabinet members would rather resign early than participate in that discussion. We just saw the acting Homeland Security secretary step down for a lot of different reasons. It would take some heavy lifting because, remember, the GOP, whether they're in the House, the Senate, who would have to approve, by the way, the invoking of the 25th Amendment, that is, the cabinet members, the majority of them would have to vote for the 25th Amendment, then Vice Presidential Pence would have to be on board, and then it would go to the House and Senate for approval and discussion. And so it's not guaranteed, even if you have those cabinet secretaries there. But there's a more powerful point here, whether you talk about the 25th or the or impeachment, is because it needs to be done, not for a statement, but to protect democracy and to make a strong pushback on those insurrectionists and those domestic terrorism. If you do nothing and let the time run out and have Biden and Harris take over on January 20th, what does that say about the five people who passed away? What does that say about the Capitol Police and others who many believe conspired to assist these insurrectionists? Something needs to be done. It's not a pound of flesh. It's about protecting our democracy and preventing another insurrection coming in the future.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the impeachment of President Trump could begin as soon as Wednesday if the 25th Amendment is not invoked by Vice President Mike Pence. What do you think? Should this process move forward, 25th Amendment or impeachment, or do you think enough is enough? I'd like to hear from you. Larry, calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for calling, Larry. What's on your mind? Larry, are you there? Okay, Larry, give me a call back if you can. So here's the situation. If you just take a look, Dr. Carter, at what Scott just said. He said, this is less about politics and about the reality is that five lives were lost during this attack on the U.S. Capitol. And yet, we are still seeing the partisan pushback, not only from members of the House, but we don't see that the Senate really has the appetite for that. So why isn't this, at least in your opinion, Dr. Carter, more symbolic than reality?
Well, because I think, at the end of it all, it's always about politics. And so many of these people that you're talking about are thinking about their bottom lines, right? They want to be reelected. And so they're thinking about what it means to put distance between themselves and Donald Trump. And Donald Trump had 75 million people vote for him. More people voted for him in 2020 than 2016. And even though, and I think Scott is exactly right, these people threaten the health and safety of our very democracy, they're still playing politics. It makes for good politics because these people are rabid and they are motivated. And they're motivated to install a certain idea of what America looks like. And these many people in Congress, both in the House and the Senate, are willing to capitalize on that for their own political ends rather than, because I think anybody with two eyes, you say, well, this isn't partisan, right? This is about human decency. But you see, there are still people who are willing to try to use all the language in the world. And they're patriots. They're, really passionate. They're all of these things other than people who were not just seeking to disrupt a constitutional process. The whole line of succession, right, not the whole line, but much of the line of succession from Mike Pence to Nancy Pelosi, to the President Pro Tem of the Senate, were all in that chamber, were all in those chambers that day. So if anybody had been successful at what they were planning to do that day, because you don't show up with zip ties and tactical gear if you just want to have a chat, we could be looking at an even bigger, more dangerous situation than we saw on the other day. And you're right, only five people lost their lives, five people lost their lives, and I'm saying only because there were thousands of people out there. But this could have been far, far worse, and if they had their druthers, it would have been worse. So yes, because of the gravity of this, everyone should be standing up and saying, a sitting president incited an overthrow of the government that he took an oath to protect, but he didn't do it by himself. Those people who conspired with him and helped him do this these last 4 years are still sitting on their thumbs today saying, well, we just need to seek reconciliation. Right? Mm. But they don't want to actually take responsibility.
They want to talk peace now.
Yes.
Exactly. Those same enablers.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
That's awfully rich on their part.
And, Scott, you are a political animal. Let's be, clear about that. Kind of talk to me about the optics of that, because you're old enough to remember what was happening with Watergate and Richard Nixon, where the president's allies turned against him and said, essentially going to the White House and saying, Mr. President, it's over. Why are we not seeing that now, or at least not yet?
Well, because you don't have the statesmen that you had on the Senate and the House side where they put country before party. There are no Howard Bakers who took the long walk to the White House and told the president that we don't have the votes to save you. We cannot protect your presidency or your political life. It's time to go. That is the only reason Nixon walked away, because he was a fighter. Now you have Senator Hawley from Missouri. You have Ted Cruz from Texas. You have 140 congressmen who still believe the false narrative, do not want to give up on the hope of another 4 years of Donald Trump, the chaos president. That's not political rhetoric. That's political reality. Not only do the enablers need to stand down and walk away or retire from their service because they are complicit in this insurrection. Let's be real clear. The Capitol Police are complicit in this insurrection. This may be opinion, but there's substantial evidence to support it. And so without the statesmen, and you have Senator, you have a House Minority Leader McCarthy talking about it's time for healing. Well, how can those who have inflicted the political pain on our democracy start talking about healing in some pivot discussion without acknowledging any accountability over the last 4 years in connection to the rabid cult-like support for president and the enablers that have empowered this craziness? See, we knew what Trump was going to be. We told you. And he's kept every promise the Democrats promised America about him. But it was the enablers that allowed him to implement and act on and tolerated his painful and demented rhetoric about this country, our democracy, and about elections and voter suppression, and you can go on down the line. Those are the ones that have to be held accountable as well.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. How are you voting if you were in Congress or if you were in the Senate? Are you saying yay or nay to impeachment, and why? Robert, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Robert. What say you?
Yes, I would vote for impeachment. I understand with a second impeachment that number 45 would lose every benefit that a past president would have. He would not get money to travel for his library. When he drops dead, he won't be able to lie in state at the Capitol. Trump does not need any of that, not out of any taxpayer's pocket.
Okay.
He needs none of it.
Okay. Robert, thank you so much for your input. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. How would you vote, yay or nay, for impeachment? Why or why not? Dr. Carter, how would this process, this impeachment process, be different from the last one? We are literally just a year ago, the president was holding up his acquittal in the Senate on his impeachment situation with the Ukraine matter. But how is this different?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things is we've never seen a president impeached twice, so that's different. I think the other thing that's going to be very different, I think, is you're going to have very different articles. So when they were producing the articles of impeachment last time, as you said, it was about collusion with this foreign government to investigate a political rival. This time you actually have a president being brought up on charges of inciting an insurrection against his own country and violating his oath. And I think this one is going to attempt to be a much more accelerated process, but it's also a process that's likely to live on beyond Donald Trump's tenure. So they're also investigating the legality of impeaching him post his tenure. So that once the swearing in of the new members of the Senate, that this process might actually not get underway in earnest until after January 20th.
So what would be the purpose of that if let us assume, and I'm going to drill down a little bit more about this, but let us assume that the House was able to quickly, I don't know how that's even possible, quickly impeach the president, but then the trial in the Senate would move forth, as just like the last time after the impeachment, the articles had to go to the Senate, and there were some delays and pushbacks. It's not like just handing somebody a sheet of paper. There is a process. So if this were to carry on beyond January 20th, what would be the point?
Well, partly what Robert said about denying him of future benefits, but the main thing is to prevent him from being able to run again in 2024, which he has already telegraphed that he would intend to do. So I think that's the main thing is being able to bar him from holding public office again.
Hmm. Yeah, let me jump in, if
sure.
I may. I think my colleagues is absolutely correct, but let me correct you on one thing. This impeachment process and deliberation could take a long time, but it doesn't have to. There's a federal statute. There's a federal statute that says you cannot incite or be part of a riot and attack the Capitol in the District of Columbia. That's the first thing. Second of all, this would be an expedited review. You wouldn't need for the legal scholars to sign off on it and to hold these hearings. You could take a vote. You could draw up some articles of impeachment. You could vote on them in the House within the same day. You could bypass the hearings and those deliberations. Then what you do is you send it over to the Senate. And by the way, there's a 2004 amendment that was passed after September 11th that would allow the minority leader and the majority leader in the Senate, if they agree now, to call them back into session and to take it up after you get the majority as the Democrats. And then the last point I want to raise is this. You know, when you start talking about articles of impeachment, there's another provision under the Constitution, the 14th Amendment, Section 3, right, that bars inciting insurrections and riots and this type of negative criminal behavior on the part of any elected official, federal or state. Under that Section 3, while it's not clear who would enforce it, you could use that, if you will. I would recommend on a simple up or down vote, it would have to pass the Senate and what have you, pass both houses. But that, arguably, and capital A, arguably, would be another way. Instead of impeaching him, you throw him out of office that way. Now, historians will disagree with me, and they disagree with each other, because Article 3 doesn't give you a pathway for enforcement. And so it's not clear how they would implement Article 3. But I must tell you this, that's another avenue that historians will argue and have argued publicly in the last couple of days as an easier pathway towards enforcement and removing the president from the White House.
Tonette calling from Bowie, Vincent calling from D.C. Do not hang up. We're going to talk to you next. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Inside segment via podcast on WHUR.com or download the new Quiet Storm app on your smartphone and hear the program the entire hour live. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This discussion continues on Sirius XM in 5 seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the second impeachment of President Trump. My guests are Dr. Niambi Carter, Howard University political science professor and author of American While Black, African Americans, Immigration, and the Limits of Citizenship, and attorney and political analyst A. Scott Bolden. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at H. Fisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Tonette, calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I vote not to impeach him. I'm wondering why you just can't arrest him and not waste the time. Because he broke the law, and I don't understand why he gets away with it, why he's above the law.
That is such an interesting question, which kind of talks about what you were just saying before the break, Scott.
Yeah, it's an excellent question. Well, a couple things. You know, Harold, you're always testing me, taking me back to law school, and now your listener is too, and I'm a proud Howard Law graduate, so I'm ready for the challenge whenever I'm on.
So get it right.
So A couple things. There's a DOJ memo that says that the president can't, while he's in office, can't be charged with a federal crime. And we think that included state crimes as well. That's the first thing. Second of all, that gets complicated because the DOJ has an acting AG right now, and the FBI and the DAJ would have to issue an indictment and then try to enforce it and legally remove the president. Politically, that's just unlikely, if you will, as a political point, because you're not dealing with someone that's not going to influence his appointees and those who support him in the government. But your listener is absolutely right. If no one is above the law, right, and he shouldn't be able to pardon himself because no one's above the law. There's a DOJ memo on that under the Nixon era where they wrote the memo that Nixon couldn't pardon himself as one of the strategies, but it's never been tested in the courts as well. And so that's even more it gets even more complicated to say, just go arrest him. He's a criminal. Well, that would have been done over the last 4 years given his bad behavior. But that's even more complicated than the 25th as well as impeachment, because you'd be relying on the GOP to enforce that, even though DOJ and the FBI represent America, not Donald Trump.
You hear all of that alphabet soup.
The Constitution is silent on that point, right? These are all, as Scott said, interpretations, yeah, not actual constitutional provisions.
You know, if you could get it done, I say go for it, and I'll be offering my legal services to defend it. Go right ahead. I'm with you.
You know, it seems to me that we have to, everyone has to follow the Constitution and follow the law, but he does not. That's the thing that gets me. He does whatever he wants.
Well,
and we still have to follow.
Go ahead, Dr. Carter.
And one more thing. When President-elect Biden said that that's not who America is, that's not true. That's exactly how America is. They forgot about the Wilmington insurrection of 1898. Exact same thing happened, but they succeeded.
And I was just going to add, you know, this immunity from prosecution is while he's sitting, right? So he has open investigations in New York. This does not mean that there won't be or couldn't be criminal charges brought against Donald Trump once he leaves office. And I think that's really why he's fighting tooth and nail to stay in office so long, because he knows this immunity vanishes on January 20th, and that's, you know, a whole nother set of headaches for him.
Oh, okay.
And he can't pardon himself from those state charges.
Yes, just federal charges, or maybe federal charges only.
So if he shoots somebody point blank, is
he still
above the law?
Oh, no, he could certainly, at the state level, and murder is usually a state charge. It could be a federal charge. It would depend on the circumstances. But as I and other legal scholars have strongly suggested, no one's above the law. So a state prosecutor could charge him for shooting someone. But let's be real clear. On the AG side, that's a civil proceeding in regard to his nonprofit and how he's used his tax exemption status and other related issues. Tish James, who was in my class at Howard University School of Law, in my section actually, is going to be rabid about that enforcement once he leaves office.
And let's be clear for those who are not in A. Scott Bolton's inner circle. Tisha James is she's the attorney, U.S. attorney.
No. She's the attorney
general for
the state of New York.
Yeah, for the state of New York. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right.
Exactly.
And
so
he's been waiting on him.
Exactly.
And Cy Vance is the district attorney for Manhattan County, which is the county prosecutor that basically covers New York City. I was there from 87 to 91. And so those are waiting. And the other thing is, let's not forget about his tax returns. See, a lot of this is going to unravel once he leaves office. They're going to get the House is going to get the tax returns. The state prosecutor and county prosecutor and the AG in New York are going to begin to get these documents because he loses a lot of real and perceived protections once he's no longer president. And so the possible demise, the complete financial demise, personal, professional demise of Trump and his organizations are all at risk here.
Yeah.
And the odds are against him beating these, if you will. And so you're looking at a real possibility of not only financial demise, but his liberty being at stake. That's all real to him and those who are involved in trying to get to the truth. So the saga of Donald Trump, despite how incredible his life has been, good, bad, and ugly, these issues are going to bear fruit, and we'll have to watch that story unfold post January 20th.
And let me just remind you, Tanette, and our listeners, and I said this before, and this is the reality, and I use the analogy of Al Capone. Even though he was reputed to have been, you know, a bootlegger, mob boss, and the like, and ordered the deaths of dozens, Al Capone went to jail for income tax evasion.
Right.
That's why he went to prison, not for being a gangster. But he went to prison for not paying his taxes.
Good point.
And so that's just something to, you know, remember when you're talking about some of the legal twists and turns. But, Tanette, thank you so much for your thoughtful questions. I really appreciate that. I do want to talk a little bit more about the politics of this, Dr. Carter. What peril might there be politically for Joe Biden and a Kamala Harris if this goes on after January 20th?
Well, I don't know that they're in any peril. I mean, I think the real danger is if they do nothing, because they have a lot of supporters and a lot of people who are looking at them to make this right somehow. And so I think the real danger would be moving toward the reconciliation without addressing any of the responsibility and any of the fault that people have here. Engaging in this insurrection. And I think, I think people like to talk about, oh, it's time to move on. But it's like, no, we can't move on. You've spent the last umpteen months saying this election was corrupt. Then you whip a crowd up into a frenzy and essentially direct them, right, to march to the Capitol, which they do, and tell them they have to be strong and all of these other things. And you courted this disaster. And so now, as many months as it took for that to happen, it's going to take that many months, if not longer, to unravel all that happened, because there is a dead police officer who was beat to death on film. There are people who were marauding through that Capitol who have still not been apprehended, right? There's still an investigation of the Capitol Police Department that needs to happen, and they still have to address the COVID vaccine rollout, the impending, the continuing and ongoing financial hardships wrought by this pandemic, which we seem to have forgotten has reached record numbers of deaths over the last few days, because we've been talking about this attempted overthrow of the government. So I think the big danger politically for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris would be to not do anything and just say, okay, well, guys, forget it. Now, it's kind of out of their hands, which I think is also a good thing. Right, this is what you have the Department of Justice and other officials there to do. But I think they have to be very clear to themselves, to their supporters and others, that this kind of violence against the U.S. government will not go unchecked.
I guess in thinking about just what you said and looking at the partisan Kool-Aid that that so many people are drinking. And I say that only half in jest,
mm-hmm.
because I look back at Watergate. And as Scott said, there weren't the statesmen and the like now that we saw back then. Because one would think, forgive me for trying to use common sense here, once the first person died, once the second person died, and once we got up to five, and all of these things, one would think that the strict constructionists in the GOP would have raised their hands and they would have said enough is enough. But all they're doing now is just talking about toning down the rhetoric, but not looking at the full depth and breadth of what has happened here. And I just find that amazing.
Well, I mean, I guess it is if you think that this is uncommon or unusual. I mean, the kind of, like you said, the kind of courting of this kind of behavior and attitude, I mean, we are at the point now where we're sort of post-facts in this country, that we can debate whether a virus kills people or not. This is where we are. But we didn't get here overnight, and Donald Trump isn't the only person that got us here. I mean, we can think about the sort of, you know, kind of appearance of the Sarah Palins, and before that, you know, sort of George W. Bush doing his best attempt at a yokel, right? This sort of, oh, I'm just, you know, some humble farmer guy from Texas, not the Yale-educated person that he was who grew up very wealthy. I mean, these people courted this kind of ignorance.
And don't forget about now, the Tea Party either.
Exactly, and that Tea Party insurgency moment, right, was just about, hey, we don't have to believe in facts, right? Facts are nothing. Facts are all open for debate. And you actually had people entertaining this. And we actually had people taking this kind of nonsense seriously. So when you fast forward, you know, several years past the T-Trump moment, but if you look, you know, over the longer arc of history, right, now you have all of these chickens coming home to roost, and you cannot tell people to bask in their ignorance and to and tell people that once you've created this idea that someone who has a different idea about the way the world should operate, that those people are evil and want to do harm to you and want to change the life that you live in these really awful ways, and then expect nothing to come of it. That's the part that gets me, because these people have created this space for the QAnons and the other sort of conspiracy theories to thrive and then throw up their hands and say, I don't know how we got here. You encouraged it. You encouraged it.
You sought their votes, too.
Absolutely.
In your communities. You see the negative and the false narrative and the QAnons and pedophiles and Trump really won the election. These people, these insurrectionists aren't acting on their own because they have some informed knowledge about the election process. That narrative that they believe has been fed by Trump and the GOP senators who sought to overturn the election. It came from them. And now they want to heal the process. But see, there's another reason why you have to match political gangsterism of the GOP with Democratic gangsterism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because accountability is super important. And then lastly, the very safety of those, the president, the vice president, the speaker, the Democratic-controlled House and Senate, their very safety, since America has revealed itself to want to engage in violence and believe in fake elections and false elections and results and back Trump, they've demonstrated that they will become domestic terrorists in their deep-seated false belief of what democracy really is and what patriotism really is. And so if you don't put that movement down, that movement that America has revealed itself to all of us, that movement threatens the physicality or the physical bodies of our leaders, but it threatens democracy, if you will. And the only guardrail against Donald Trump and democracy the last 4 years, ironically, has been the judiciary, who has said no and stayed independent. But the safety of our democracy and our democratic leaders and human decency is at stake. That's why you impeach. That's why you do the 25th. And that's why you've got to put these folks down. You know, there are 30 Capitol Police officers under investigation for being complicit in this insurrection. Two have been suspended already as of today. This is real. This ain't over. This is real.
Which brings me to a point that I wanted to make earlier when you were giving us this constitutional lesson, and I really appreciate it. When I'm very serious about that there are things, there is stuff that goes to the heart of what Tonette was saying or was asking. Why can't he be arrested? It's you can't yell fire in a crowded theater kind of, right. You know, kind of situation. And one of the things that Tonette said that struck me was that the president appears to be above the law and that he can do whatever the heck he wants to do and there are no consequences, which brings me to this point. One of the things that President Trump has done is test the paper that the Constitution is written on. And it seems, at least from some quarters, that it may not be worth more than the paper. It may not be worth more than its historical value at an auction if the people who are supposed to defend it allow these kinds of things to happen.
Well, if you're asking me, I don't know which one of us you're asking.
Both of you. Yeah, both of you. Well, but go ahead.
Okay. I'll be very quick. The Constitution is a living document, and while I may be a strict constructionist, it still is applicable to 2021. And it's only as good as those who believe in it and implement. We're a country of laws. If we decided not to follow the laws, the Constitution and state laws and federal laws that are on paper mean nothing. That's what distinguishes us in America from many other countries. I'm not going to say third world countries because they're third world country democracies. But if you don't follow the law and the culture of your people and your community and this country isn't to follow the laws, then we are no better than the failings of other countries, whether they're democratic or socialist or dictatorships, you name it. And so the failure and lawlessness in this country from the executive doesn't come from the power of the executive, but comes from those who have enabled him, the Senate and the House and the state houses and in some cases Republican judges and what have you. Because without them, the law against Donald Trump would be much more powerful.
Well, that's exactly what I mean, because mm-hmm. If the Josh Hawleys and the uh-huh. Ted Cruzes of this country have, prior to the election of Donald Trump, been so outspoken and called him dangerous and all of these things, and then they lean toward the partisanship, what is politically expedient. And it just seems to me they've sold their souls to the devil. And now here we come around again after this incident last week. They're right back to where they started. And mm-hmm. which to me devalues the Constitution because they remain in power and they remain the enablers. And if this impeachment process moves forward this week, wrong is wrong. But if they aren't even able to, you can argue Ukraine, okay. But this is so black and white.
Well,
and it's life and death.
Absolutely, I think you're right that it's a life and death moment because that's what we were talking about. You know, you saw people with their guns and their zip ties, Molotov cocktails. I mean, all kinds of weaponry were in and around D.C. this weekend, and I need people to recognize how dangerous that is. But I will say this: the Constitution isn't magic. Right, the Constitution mm-hmm. won't save us from anything if people aren't willing to adhere to the letter of the law, including the limits on their own power. And I think if nothing else, this moment in time, this Donald Trump / Tea Party revolution years that we've witnessed and we've seen, is that, democracy is a verb, right? It is not just a state of being. It just doesn't appear out mm-hmm. of the clear blue, that you actually have to work at it, and you have to know that the people that you elect – to be faithful to that democracy will do so. Now, there are a lot of people in this country with authoritarian leanings, which is why they leaned in so heavily to Donald Trump and those of their ilk. All of these people who were at the Capitol don't care about democracy. They care about winning. And they don't care that they would behave and were behaving like autocrats, right, to get what they wanted, because what they wanted was their guy at all costs. They only care that now that they didn't get their way and they are facing repercussions. People are being fired for being present. People are, you know, actually having real consequences. They're saying, well, we were okay with weaponizing the state against all the other people, but now those weapons are turned against us and we don't understand. But that's what being in the democracy is, that there are rules and there are laws. And if you break them, these are the consequences. And people don't really, and we shouldn't really care what your political leanings are. And the Constitution doesn't do anything on its own. It requires all the branches to uphold their end of the bargain and do what they're supposed to do. And I think now we know we perhaps need a little bit more guardrails around this this democracy and this democratic project than we thought we did, because like those taxes we're used to seeing from presidents, that's a custom. That's not a requirement.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, all of these things are a lot of the things that we do are out of custom.
Yeah. Well, the real guardrails, though, if I may supplement my colleague's statements, because I agree with her, is that what we haven't talked about, we've set the table for all of this, but the real guardrails beyond the judiciary are the voters, if you will. Because the voters put in representatives of the Senate and the House of Representatives, state level, federal level, and what have you. And people of human decency, people of color, Democrats, people being abused, have the power to vote. And these bad actors, as I say, the GOP and the Senate and House of Representatives, the people who after the insurrection came back into the Capitol and continue to try to overturn the Biden victory. They were elected, and they need to get unelected. If Democrats organize and Democrats deliver their votes in Texas, in Missouri, and elsewhere, because that's the real safeguard. And if that doesn't work, and it's the power of the people. I mean, that's the basis of democracy in our Constitution. Remember, we voted, not we, but America voted Donald Trump in. 75 million Americans tried to put him in again, given all of his failings and what have you. They didn't mind him serving again. And so if there was a failure to go around, a blame to go around, there's a lot of blame. But I got to tell you, it was the voters that put him in, and it was the voters that took him out. And the same has to happen with the bad actors on the in the Senate and the House of Representatives.
Dr. Carter, your thoughts, look into your crystal ball and tell me, what do you think is going to happen tomorrow and Wednesday?
Who knows? I don't think much is going to happen tomorrow. I mean, I wish I could tell you, right? Like, this has been one of the most unusual presidential seasons anybody has ever witnessed, right? But Nancy Pelosi has said what she's going to do. And those people were coming to Nancy Pelosi. They were coming to hurt her, and I think Nancy Pelosi is not going to allow this to go unanswered. So whether the impeachment is successful, I think, is another matter. But I think she was absolutely serious when she said Mike Pence had until Wednesday to invoke the 25th Amendment, and she was going to move forward with those articles of impeachment in the House. Now, it may not go much farther because of the Senate, and we know Mitch McConnell. He has been an obstructionist. He has been the biggest do-nothing majority leader ever because that's what he likes to do, to thwart process. But, you know, Nancy Pelosi has made it clear what she's going to do. And I think, you know, it's hard to call it. I think it's still so raw at this point. But I think right now the Democratic Party is probably thinking about all of its available options for seeking some redress against Donald Trump. I don't think they will let this go, even when he leaves office. This is not over yet.
So, Scott, you spoke earlier about a quick process to impeachment as a possibility. And when you said that, I kind of laughed to myself because I said, you know, we are talking about Congress. and we're talking about people who live to make speeches and live to be heard. Do you really think that even if, as Nancy Pelosi says, that she has the votes, that this is going to be a quick process?
Well, remember, there are several Republican defections that have been made public. Adam Kinzinger, I think, out of
he was the first.
Illinois was the first. There are others on the House side and even the Senate side that are for censure or impeachment. So this is what I think. I don't think the 25th Amendment is going to be invoked by the cabinet. I think that they can get a quick impeachment up or down. They don't have to have a hearing on it. They got it all in black and white. And I think that McConnell, who owes Trump nothing, if you will, and has been acting, at least in short term, in regard to Biden's victory, has been acting like a majority leader, his time is almost up. And I think if, you know, the Republicans control the Senate by what, three or four votes, maybe two votes, actually, two votes. If he gets a couple of defections on the Republican side, like Murkowski, who has said he should be impeached, and a few others, then McConnell cannot stop the vote from coming to the floor. If the Democrats and, let's say, four or five senators make up the majority, you could see a vote of historical proportions. You could. Mm-hmm. I know the House will certainly impeach him. The question is, will the Senate
will he be convicted in the Senate? Well, we are going to continue to look at that. I tell you, as Dr. Carter said, this is the most unusual, wild presidential election year ever.
We all have a book in us, Harold.
Yeah.
All of us living through this have a book in us.
Or two.
We were.
Or a book or two or 12.
Right.
Dr. Niambi Carter and Attorney A. Scott Bolden, thank you so much for talking to
us.
Thank you. Be safe out there. We have much, much more to look at.
Thank you, Harold.
All right.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, January 11th, 2021. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.